The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show on a busy Wednesday alongside Caitlin Stasiak. I'm Jordan Hamm. We have a great show for you here on this Wednesday. Brad, gonna meet with Manny Wilkins. They shot this on Sunday at the ASU banquet. They go one-on-one, talking a lot about Manny's legacy, what he's proud of, what he, you know, wished would improve or would have improved over the past couple of years. Goes pretty in-depth with him. So a lot of stuff that they cover with that. NFL Network senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano, you have fantasy football questions. He has fantasy football answers. We're probably in the postseason if you are in most regular leagues. So definitely tune into that to get all of your answers. And then, of course, talk to the Lopes with GCU Lopes reporter Paul Coro. They cover a lot of ground. Basketball, swimming, a lot of different sports, and a lot going on with GCU. So that's Talk to the Lopes. Again, it's a very busy Wednesday, so we're going to start our rundown, and that is provided to us by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. Want to start things off with the Phoenix Suns, and Haley, I thought that we could talk about the Phoenix Suns for as long as they led in the game last night against Sacramento. So Coyotes. Let's talk Coyotes. They win four straight. Another big win for the Yotes as they string together a four-game winning streak, outscoring opponents 15-5 in that span.
You know, they come back home on Thursday, and the last time I was out at the Coyotes, they were going for a sixth straight streak. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to sit this one out, I think, because I screwed that streak up. So hopefully this streak continues on longer than that. I won't show up. I know I talked to some of their communication staff that day, and I was like, hopefully I'm not a bad omen, and I turned out to be a bad omen. So I'm not going to contribute to that. But yeah, I mean, they've made some changes. They've got several guys out with injuries, so this streak means a little bit more with that. Aiden Hill in the net there. He's 4-0 in these games, and he's only allowed 2 goals, which is pretty impressive. Obviously, the addition of Nick Schmaltz has been good, 4-0 in that span since he's joined the team as well. So looking up for the Coyotes after they kind of took a turn, things weren't going so well for them.
Since that trade, what do you think has been the spark for them?
You know, I think things are just clicking the right time again. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where when you do have injuries, you have to figure out how you're going to step up, and they've adjusted to that adversity well. I think that's something that in the last couple of years, that's kind of been a question mark. Will the Coyotes adjust to this adversity that they're facing, or will it be a downturn in a stretch? And they've turned this into something where they're capitalizing on it and they're making it work.
So good streak by them. They're starting to heat up, I think, at the right time here as they try to put a bow on 2018. Yeah. Patrick Corbin, we knew he would be highly sought after. We knew he'd be a hot commodity in this free agent field. The top left-handed pitcher, he gets what a top left-handed pitcher should get. In 6 years, $140 million. From the Washington Nationals. And this is a bit of a surprise. I think everyone kind of thought the New York Yankees were the heavy favorite, even at Patrick Corbin's wedding.
Yeah,
his brother was doing a toast and put a Yankees hat on and
Yankees
said, I hope, you know, you and your wife can get closer to the family than Arizona. But he ends up going with the Nationals.
You know, the interesting thing here with this is I saw a tweet by Bob Nightingale, I believe it was yesterday morning, that said that the Phillies were making it known that they weren't going to be outbid, and that other teams were aware that the Phillies weren't going to be outbid.
Right.
And it's interesting because the Yankees didn't seem to be that high up in the mix as kind of was anticipated. I know in the last few days, it's definitely been the Phillies have been the front runner there. And then all of a sudden we see the reports that the Nationals got him. So I think, I mean, it's not New York. He's not right in the family's backyard.
It's East Coast.
It's still the East Coast. He is a little bit closer there. And I think it's a good fit. And I think he's going to fit into this rotation that the Nationals have very well.
The Nationals have won the offseason quite a few times the past couple of years. It hasn't really panned out for them. But what I was reading about kind of what hung up the Phillies was they didn't want to give a sixth year. They want to try to limit that. So it wasn't as much the money as it was the duration. And that was kind of the downfall. So now there are questions about, you know, they've been heavily linked to Bryce Harper, to Manny Machado. Are they going to give them a, how many years are they going to give those guys? You know, what's the window as they're trying to get back into contention?
And I think part of this signing with Patrick Corbin does indicate somewhat what the allocation that the Nationals will have for Bryce Harper. I think Bryce Harper is out of Washington.
And I read an article Baseball America put out, kind of buyer beware on some of these top guys. Patrick Corbin was included in that. Mainly, I think it was kind of the durability, because
that's kind of how I had that kind of the same thought there.
Yeah, with. Where it's you look at his really, really good years. He's had a pretty good career so far, but the really good years, 2013, 2018, obviously 2018, a contract year. And that's when he was at his best, 3.15 ERA. You know, we always kind of, when we were doing the Diamonds in the Desert podcast, we were always setting it up compared to that 2013 season. He obviously leapfrogged that. They didn't get to the postseason, but definitely not because of him. So obviously a huge loss, but I don't think a surprising loss for the Diamondbacks. Again, Mike Hazen has to use the word creative a lot with how they want to do their signings, how they want to make trades, because they are pretty handcuffed right now with where their salaries are at. And I know that it looks more and more like they're starting to go into a rebuild. What degree of the rebuild, we don't know. But getting really creative means signing a player who is an Arizona native, but spent time in Japan, Merrill Kelly.
South Korea.
South Korea, yes. But internationally, Merrill Kelly, Desert Mountain High School, Arizona State, wasn't able to make it really in the big league, so went international, is coming back, and they're thinking that he could be a back-of-the-rotation guy or just a solid reliever, which was obviously an issue for them in the back half of that 2018 season. So your thoughts on this signing?
You know, you're talking a little bit about the creativeness that Mike Hazen's talked about. And for the sake of the heart health of all Diamondbacks fans, let's just kind of be okay with the fact that he's not pulling what the Mariners are pulling right now quite yet. I know there's some stuff in the cards there. But yes, for the sake of the heart health of all Diamondbacks fans, he hasn't gotten too creative quite yet. I know the Mariners rebuild is kind of crazy right now, especially in this last weekend. But I think this is going to be a signing where we'll see. I know some of the signings they had at the back half of the 2018 season weren't kind of as big as they expected. Obviously, there were some downfalls there with the guys they did sign. So I think that we'll see in spring training how he adjusts. I know international hitters are a little bit different than these major league hitters. So how he makes that readjustment back to the big leagues is going to be interesting.
To me, this is a low risk, high reward. If this doesn't pan out, it's $5 million over the course of 2 years. There's a team option in there. It seems like a lot of the leverage was with the Diamondbacks. And I think that makes sense. But reading up from Zach Buchanan, what Merrill said was when he left Major League Baseball to go play internationally, he was touching 89 to like 91. Now he's up to like 96, 97. So there's some development there. Again, I think that this, I'm kind of looking at this as a, put it in the same box as a Clay Buchholz signing, where it's, okay, if this doesn't pan out, no one's going to be like, and why did you invest all that money in that person?
Buchholz was surprising,
Yeah, it's not and that's, I feel like the back of the rotation is where Mike Hazen has had a lot of success, either, you know, having that sixth guy in the minor leagues where they call up and it's Zach Godley or Matt Cook. Or coming in and getting a Clay Buchholz. Like, I feel like the back of the rotation for the Diamondbacks is what, like, the third and fourth round is for the Arizona Cardinals. Like, they just typically hit on that. So,
speaking of the Arizona Cardinals.
So, that's a signing. Also reports that the St. Louis Cardinals and the Arizona Diamondbacks have been in conversation for Paul Goldschmidt. Paul Goldschmidt, one more year on his very, very affordable deal that he signed a couple years ago. He's obviously kind of where the Diamondbacks are at. Look, it's just the timing. If you want a successful franchise and sustainable franchise, the window has to be there before you can do all these deals and try to invest all this money, but the window's got to be there. And that's why I've been in support of, at the very least, a slight rebuild for the Arizona Diamondbacks, because you now have Patrick Corbin completely gone. AJ Pollock is likely gone. Two big-time contributors on a team where you still couldn't quite make the playoffs. You have some big guns in the NL West. And then you have one more year left with Paul Goldschmidt, where on an open market, he's going to get a lot more than I think what the Diamondbacks can pony up, at least right now.
Right.
So, but the talks have been with, we've heard the Astros a lot. We've heard the St. Louis Cardinals. It seems like the talks with the Cardinals have heated up, but it's still probably a ways away. But looking at some of the prospects that have been linked, you know, Dakota Hudson, Tyler O'Neill, Carson Kelly, these are all fringe major leaguers right now. So it could be, it's not going to be one of those things where it's like, you'll see the guys that they get for Paul Goldschmidt in 2022.
Right.
Like, these could be young guys that could help the team out. But again, it's a ways away, but still just a kind of a strange time to be in with Paul Goldschmidt being the face of the Diamondbacks.
You know, and I think when you take a look at what they do have in this farm system, you had several guys up with this AFL in the AFL League this fall. So looking at the way those guys performed, they have the tools. I mean, last spring we talked to Kevin Crone, who was up with the big league team, and he can fit in there at first base. He can fit in the hot corner. Like, there's some opportunity there for someone to fill in that role potentially. Obviously, Paul Goldschmidt, going to be tough to match his talent. But I think that the Diamondbacks, if in fact they are going to do a rebuild, they're going to have to do this deal.
Right. They're going to have to deal Paul Goldschmidt, find a way to deal Zach Greinke, you know, and with that is going to come some other potential steps back. You're going to need to either take on some money that you won't be able to use on other guys, but it'll kind of help soften the blow of the money owed to Zach Greinke, or you're going to be taking on bad contracts on, you know, guys that maybe are a bit washed up. So you're taking those steps back in hopes to go ahead and get some guys that can be ready for you in the coming years. So that's kind of just where I feel like the Diamondbacks stand. Interesting already, though, it's already been a more active offseason than last year.
You know, I like kind of was thinking that just in terms of where we were at here. And one of the things that it seems like every year is like, this is crazier than last year. This is crazier than last year.
Right.
Like we were talking about the Mariners. It's kind of been like, whoa, this is crazier than this time last year. But it just
Last year, the bar was so low because it was so stagnant. You had like 60 guys going to a free agent camp to continue to work out.
Well, and
that
was
where we were at in the offseason, where Mike Moustakas was getting signed like a week before the season. Like big time names.
That's right.
Weren't able to, you know, find that link because the market was just so stale and no one wanted to make a move. And it was just a big staring contest. And it eventually all evened out. But that's also part of the reason, like, Clay Buchholz was a pretty late addition to the Diamondbacks. And, you know, again, that low-risk contract. But I think everybody, a lot of those guys signed the one-year deals. And it's like, okay, this will be a clean reset. It's starting to seem like there isn't as many teams trying to tank. And that's good. You have the Phillies that have been pretty rough the past couple of years wanting to be a big spender. You have a lot of these teams wanting to at least make moves. And it's, whether it's setting themselves up for a couple years from now or setting themselves up from now, there's at least movement. And I'm excited that there's movement. So, but yeah, just a lot going on with this
hot stove
season. It was a very cold, it was a microwave last year. Coming up next, we have Brad Sesmet with Manny Wilkins. They go in depth on Manny's legacy and so much more surrounding ASU football. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmet Show.
So Arizona State will play Fresno State in the Las Vegas Bowl. That comes up a week from Saturday. Bowl season comes into full play. U of A is not in a bowl game this year. There's some pretty good bowl matchups. I saw where Iowa State is going to play Washington State. Of course, my infatuation with Brock Purdy, former Perry quarterback who's killing it, against Minshew and Mike Leach. That's a great game. That'll be the 28th. That'll be in San Antonio. They'll put bowl games on all the time, all hours. Because during the holiday season, guys just sit there with a TV on. They watch every last stinking bowl game. I'm not one of those, but there's a few that I'll check out for sure. The Fiesta has UCF against LSU. Nah. Heisman vote is today. At the banquet last night for ASU, Manny Wilkins came up and we visited some. I spent some time talking with him off camera. Then we banged out a couple of minutes. This was Manny Wilkins. This was last night before the ASU football banquet. All right, so football banquet first and foremost. This is your last one, unless you come back and do this role of MC. What does this mean to you tonight?
You know, I think this is just an opportunity for us to all take a step back and, you know, really reflect on everything that we've accomplished as a university, as a group of young men on the football team, and just be grateful for it and give thanks to our parents who have put us here, our family, our friends who have, you know, helped pave this way for us, and just kind of one back big last grouping of everybody just together.
If I would have told you when you came to Arizona State that this is how the script would be written, would you have believed it?
Definitely not. But over the years, I've learned that destiny's going to happen the way it's destined to happen. You know, I've learned to accept and take the blessings as they come. You know, when times are hard, I pray. And when times are going well, I continue to pray, that type of thing. So you just have to remain focused on the plan, remain focused on the course. And, you know, no matter what the obstacle is, if you have a vision that you can get to it, you'll get there.
What are you most proud of from your time at Arizona State?
There wasn't one time that there was something negative written about me in the papers, something negative on my character and who I am as a person in the community. Nothing but positive things. You know, I haven't had any altercations with anybody. And, you know, I'm just proud that my name is something that people remember of positive thoughts, and nothing that ever comes up in their head is negative energy, unless it's something obviously they hating on about the football field. That's just, that's a given with this game. But me as a person, there's no question what I represent.
Academically, what are you most proud of?
Well, I graduated in 3.5 years, currently in law school. You know, I plan on finishing that out, take a little break here for about maybe a semester or a year, get back after it. So I know the importance of it. Definitely. I know the doors it has opened up for me. I've gained to mature and realize those things and accept them and go after them. So, to get that master's degree would mean a lot to me. So I'm going to come back and finish that up.
If I'm looking at you 5-10 years from now, are you an agent? Are you a coach? Are you a businessman? What's Manny? You still playing football? What?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, obviously my goal is to utilize this game and this platform as long as I can. You know, it doesn't happen to many people. So that's my goal, is to play this game that I love as long as I possibly can. After that, you know, I definitely want to do something with the youth and helping them know the importance of branding and know the importance of self-brand and self-awareness and all types of situations. You know, I have a lot of dreams. You know, I love music. You know, I think there'll be some point in my life that I'll, you know, step my foot into the music industry and, you know, kind of see what's there for me. But who knows? Who knows where my journey is? It's just beginning. So,
cool. Two other questions. Bowl game. What do you think?
I'm excited. You know, I've known Marcus McMarion now for, I'd say, almost 8 years, 9 years, and he's the quarterback of their football team. I trained with him this past offseason. You know, I'm excited to get to go against these guys. They have a really good football team, really well-seasoned coach who's he's been around this game for a long time, so he knows what he's doing, and they play hard for him. So I'm excited Las Vegas decided to accept us to come to this bowl game. I know it's big for their city having us come out and represent a Pac-12 football team. So we'll treat it the right way. We'll handle it the right way, and we'll come out there ready to win that football game.
What can you do that N'Keal Harry can't on the football field?
He'd probably tell you I jump over people better than him. besides that, probably nothing else, because he is absolutely – I probably throw better than him. But that being said, he can really sling it too. So probably just – I'll say jumping over people.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
So Manny Wilkins, that was yesterday. Last night at the event, he came over to me and said, hey, I want to introduce Ray Anderson. And there was a lot of emotion last night because N'Keal's up there on the dais. Manny's up there. All the seniors are up there. And whether you don't like ASU or you love ASU or you have another team, just know that when you go to football banquets for seniors, it is pretty cool because you see these guys that have made it through college. And whether they've had a good season or a bad season, they're going on to the next step. You know, I looked around at all those seniors last night and said, see all these fans that are out here? These are people you're going to need to have work and help you when your business goes under, when you get hurt, when you have life stuff happen. And it was a great room. It was overflowing last night. It was the biggest, well-attended football banquet they've had in many, 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 many years. Their silent auction raised like three times what it did the year before. So people are very excited about that. But in talking with Manny and Nikhil, I would say that they've both accomplished everything outside of getting to a Rose Bowl game. For some of you, that's all that matters, right? The whole academic thing, it's like, yeah, okay, whatever, Brad. I'm a little different than that. I like to see where kids' journey takes them. And I think both those guys are going to do things well beyond football when their playing careers are done. They've got other interests and they've become well-rounded based on their time at Arizona State. And that's what it really is all about. Jordan did something extraordinary on Friday night. You'll hear it and see it, I think, too. And we're going to talk some recruiting. That is next. Letter of Intent Day is right around the corner. Of course, Jordan, a big part of our recruiting platform here at sports360az.com. That's next. And now time to check in with the Hall of Famer. This is why Michael Fabiano is the Hall of Famer at the NFL Network and NFL.com. I brazenly predicted last week that the Cardinals would go to Green Bay. Michael laughed at me and said, not so fast. And what happened? I got crushed. I got destroyed. Mike McCarthy got fired. That's why Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer with the NFL Network and NFL.com, talking fantasy football is right pretty much 99.9% of the time. That's the way it works. Unless it's
you know what, pal?
Related.
If that were true,
yeah,
and I was right 99% of the time, I'd be making a whole heck of a lot more money, and I'd be in business for myself. Okay? That is the truth.
We've got hey, the Cardinals can say they got a coach fired, so they got that going.
It was a shock, but the Packers, I mean, that team has been going in the wrong direction. There's been friction between McCarthy and clearly Rodgers, and the Packers didn't show up at all.
Right.
They just did not show up. So we'll see what happens now with Joe Philbin at the helm there. So I do suspect that the Packers offense at least will bounce back this week against Atlanta. You know, it's funny that in a week where Aaron Rodgers put up another stinker, you had at least four other stud quarterbacks, including Tom Brady and Cam Newton and Drew Brees, who also might have cost fantasy owners a chance to go to their playoffs.
Yeah, no, that's I have to tell you, not to brag on fantasy teams because I think it's obnoxious when people do it. I'm not going to brag. I'm just going to say Russell Wilson, for me, has been my best pick this year.
Yeah, man. He started off slowly.
Yep.
But he's always been a second-half star, and he was my start of the week at quarterback last week. Had a very nice stat line against the Niners.
So let's go through, because I'm getting all these questions about injuries and mm-hmm. Kareem Hunt. I mean, there's nothing they can do with Kareem Hunt. I guess on Kareem Hunt, it would have to be one of the most shocking situations you in fantasy have ever been in, I would think.
Yeah, and it's trivial to even talk about fantasy football considering what was on that video, but unfortunately in this case, that's what I have to do.
Yep.
And anyone who saw the news likely went out on their waiver wire and picked up Spencer Ware. And Spencer Ware is not nearly as good as Kareem Hunt. He's not an all-around back like Kareem Hunt is, but he's going to see volume in a high-scoring offense, which means he could give you RB2 value down the stretch here in your fantasy playoffs. And to get a running back that can produce at a pretty high level in week 13 off the waiver wire, I mean, it's an early Christmas gift, I'll tell you that. And unfortunately, we've seen this, and I'm not just talking about the Kareem Hunt situation, but the sudden absence of stud running backs. Melvin Gordon missed last week, and all of a sudden Austin Eckler was thrust into a more important role, and Justin Jackson was the better back. Leonard Fournette was suspended, so people were trying to replace him, and now you've got James Conner, who's going to be out this week. You have to replace him, so Jalen Samuels will be the hottest name off the waiver wire. Matt Breida also going to miss a game, and I get it. Breida's been injury-prone all season long, but his last two games he's been very good. And now you're looking at a player that is owned in 0% of NFL.com leagues, at least he was over the weekend, Jeff Wilson Jr.
Yeah.
And now he will be a hot pickup, too.
How about that? That's good stuff right there.
He's like the new Gus Edwards, the dude that no one ever heard of that was thrust into a prominent role and is now going to be picked up across the board in fantasy leagues.
We're at that time of year where it's kind of like nobody likes to see how sausage is made. We all like to eat it, but there's sausage. You know what I mean? It's just like body parts of pigs that are being thrown together to make players. No offense to players. It's just we're at the nub.
We are craving volume at positions of need, and a guy like Jalen is going to see volume. A guy like Wilson is going to see volume, and so despite their names and their lack of name value, if the volume of touches is there, they're going to have value.
Yeah, no, that's true. Mailbag, let's get right to it, because you've answered a lot of the questions around James Conner. Melvin Gordon, Phillip Lindsay, Adrian Peterson. This would have to be the Gordon injury. Two of the three.
Right.
Where do you go?
Well, I don't know that Gordon's going to be back this week. I don't know that we're going to know until later in the week. And to be quite honest with you, why would the Chargers bring him back against the Bengals?
Right.
They're
right.
Terrible. So if I had to guess, and this is just a guess, you're going to be without Melvin Gordon for another week.
Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield? This is an interesting one. Two rooks.
Two rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And Josh Allen's giving you 26-plus in two straight weeks.
Yeah.
And he's not a good passer in terms of his production. It's all on the ground. It's funny because we all talked about Lamar Jackson being that rookie running quarterback who can help you. Josh Allen's been better. And with that being said, I'm starting Baker Mayfield. But Allen has been a streamable option in fantasy. Baker almost threw for 400 yards last week. Did not put up a good stat line, but I expect him to rebound against Carolina. Their defense has been bad lately.
Cohen, Kamara, McCaffrey.
Yeah, Cohen sits, and I get it because Cohen's coming off a monster game. You do not start a Cohen, regardless of what he's done, over Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara. You just do not do it.
Russell Wilson or Philip Rivers from the mailbag?
Rivers this week. Wilson's been good. Tough matchup at home against the Vikings. Rivers gets the Bengals. And as I mentioned, that is a nice matchup for anyone in the Chargers offense.
A.J. Green being gone, what does Mike recommend?
Well, Dante Pettis could be an option off the waiver wire. And if you look at his numbers, 3 touchdowns in his last 2 games, he also has one of the easier schedules among wide receivers during the fantasy playoffs. So if Pettis is out there, he's worth a look. Curtis Samuel also worth a look. But Pettis would be my number one target if I needed a wide receiver.
All right, before we get you out of here, a lot of questions just about strategy here now that playoffs are starting. You have any ways that you lean in playoffs or look at some guys and say, there's no way that this guy a month ago I would have played, but now I got to play him because he's just killing it?
So I said it a couple of weeks ago, you need to handcuff your top running backs. And if you listen to me a couple of weeks ago,
yes,
then you're in good shape if you have James Conner. Or if you have, for example, someone like Melvin Gordon,
Melvin Gordon,
Austin Eckler was a little bit of a tougher handcuff because he's rostered in most leagues. But you continue to look for volume plays off of the waiver wire if you're in need at the position. I just gave you a couple of guys. And I get it. Typically, people are going to stick with their studs. And at running back, wide receiver, tight end, you're going to do that. But don't be afraid to play the matchups at quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. This season he has been a good fantasy quarterback, not a great one. And although I like the matchup this week, I can understand if some people may want to fade him. Now, I wouldn't fade him unless I had a very good alternative, but a guy like Rodgers, a guy like Tom Brady, I wouldn't argue against anyone who said, hey, I'm starting Baker Mayfield over Tom Brady. Wouldn't argue with it. You want to stick with your studs in most cases, but quarterback is so ridiculously deep. And based on what we saw from some of the quarterbacks last week who put up monster numbers that no one started, like Josh Allen, not like Nick Mullins, the quarterback position is a little bit easier to play the matchups with. So typically you're going to stick with your big-name guys. You're going to want to handcuff your top running backs if you haven't done so already. And I think another point of advice that I would give, and actually I did this in one of my leagues earlier in the season and it cost me, was don't get too cute. You know, don't get too cute. Josh Allen's had 2 big games, I get it, but you're not going to start him over Aaron Rodgers, okay? There are some players out there who put up decent stat lines, and you look at it and you think, this guy had 15 fantasy points last week, but then when you go and look at his touches, like for Chase Edmonds, for example, they weren't there. He just happened to score 2 touchdowns. So Chase Edmonds suddenly isn't going to be a startable asset in fantasy leagues because he had a couple of touchdowns last week. I mean, the same thing goes with James Devlin. Don't get cute. You're going to lean on your studs. But this is a tough time when people are going to be stressed out about matchups. And I would just tell you, check the rankings of your favorite fantasy football analyst, whether it's myself or someone else in the industry. There's plenty of great guys out there, and you got to trust the process. And that's what we always say in the industry. You've got to trust the process.
He is hungry. He is humble. He is Michael Fabiano. That's why we love having him. Thanks, pal. Talk next week.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Take care. All right.
Michael Fabiano right there at the NFL Network and NFL.com. Great content as always. Sports360AZ.com. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics. And this week, because there is so much going on here in the heart of the sports season, it is time to have Paul Coro with us. We have not had Paul in quite some time, GCULopes.com, because I've got men's volleyball, I've got swimming, I've got all stuff around hoops that I need to get to. All right, let's start with basketball first and foremost. And that is, as you and I are sitting here in early December, do you like what you see in the ability for this team to get through the WAC tournament? I know March is a long ways away, but you can get a gauge about a team early on. Is this looking like a team that's going to be playing in March Madness right now as we're talking?
They're certainly giving themselves a great chance to be there, because I feel like this non-conference schedule being the toughest they've ever played is making them a little bit more battle-tested. Mm. You know, the Wooden Legacy that they just went through, they went 1-2 there. They played really top-caliber teams with Seton Hall, Utah. They played 3 games in 4 days, a very conference tournament kind of feel and pace. They had Seton Hall on the ropes with 106 to go. They were leading, lost the lead. Seton Hall wins the tournament. And then you're watching them Saturday, and Seton Hall's, you know, beating Louisville, and they lost at the end. But the guy that, you know, couldn't miss a shot, when the Lopes lost, couldn't make a shot. You know, they just caught him on the wrong day. So, but, you know, each one of these battles, you know, going to South Dakota State to start the season, playing Seton Hall, those were all games that went down to the wire against teams that go to the tournament every year. Then when Boise State comes here Saturday, you know, they're getting a little bit more familiar with those situations, and they figured out how to close out a game Saturday. They were down 10. They rallied. The game was back and forth down the stretch, but they finished it. And that's a Boise State's record, not great so far, but that's a team that goes to the tournament, gets 20 wins a season. It's pretty good. Had beat them last year. So those kind of moments are, but it doesn't get any easier coming up. And, you know, this will all get them ready. You know, they're going to play Nevada on Sunday. And then after that, they go to Texas and Northern Iowa. They got a road game at San Diego later this month, the team that beat them at home last year. So it's much more of a test than last season.
All right, let's get into Nevada this weekend. I think it's a great matchup. Nevada's ranked 6th in the country. Eric Musselman is someone, I'm sure you covered him at some point in time, right, when he was an NBA guy? If I'm not dating you too much.
Yeah, very intense reputation as a coach, still yes. So, as a college coach.
Yeah, and I think Dan on one sideline and Eric on the other at Talking Stick on Sunday afternoon is going to be fun. I'm very much looking forward to this. What can you give the fans in way of a preview of this game?
Well, the whole event's great. The whole Jerry Colangelo Classic is, I mean, you know, 3 top 10 teams in the venue with GCU, with Gonzaga, Tennessee is the first game at 1, and then 3:30 GCU plays Nevada. That game's also going to be on ESPNU. And, you know, on paper, certainly you look like, wow, Lopes got a big task here. But last year they played Nevada in an exhibition game in Reno and represented themselves well, lost it by 9. But didn't have Josh Brown in that game. Obviously, it didn't mean anything. There wasn't the level of scouting you'd have for a regular season game, but it at least told them that they belong on the court with them, just like these, you know, other games have against other tournament teams. So they get a full week to prepare. I think it's a little tricky for Nevada because their week is probably largely focused on playing ASU on Friday night, mm-hmm. and another game that's tied to this event. So it's a quick turnaround for the Wolfpack. You know, they're playing in L.A. late Friday, travel day Saturday, day game Sunday. So, you know, if the Lopes are ever going to contend with a top 10 team, then being in the hometown in this kind of format might be give them a chance.
What about the brothers? They're starting together. How good of a story is this one for you to cover?
It's fun. Tim and Michael Finke what a great family. It's, you know, dad's a high school coach. Mom and dad are realtors together, you know, grew up in Champaign, Illinois. Dad used to be an Illinois football, basketball player, you think everything probably in that family is panned out, like they're all the kids will go to Illinois and that'll be it. Well, Michael goes to play there and then ultimately is looking at a grad transfer at the same time Tim's coming to college. And because Michael's a fifth-year guy, you know, two brothers who never thought they'd play a school game together, high school or college, suddenly have the chance to do it. Michael passed up schools like Nevada that they're playing Sunday, and you know, Stanford, Vandy, you know, some of the highest academic programs in the nation to pick GCU. And because he saw a big man opportunity, he saw a chance to play with his brother. And I mean, I think one of my favorite stories I heard of that is Jerry Colangelo talked to him on his visit about the Van Arsdales and how it took him 7 years to get Tom and Dick together for one season at the end of Tom's career. And but it was something that they treasured for the rest of their lives, and that's what Tim and Michael have. And who knew that Tim would end up in the starting lineup with them too? It's pretty cool.
That is a great story. Talking with Paul Coro, GCLopes.com, busy time on campus. Talk to the Lopes this week. Over to swim. So an NCAA qualifier to talk about in the 100 backstroke.
Yeah, we've talked about Mark Nikolaev in the past. He did great things last season, wound up 10th in the nation, had like the second best time during the regular season last year in the 100 backstroke. But this year he's taken it to another level. It's a senior year, and they were at an Iowa meet, the Hawkeye Invitational last month, and he put up a 4.461 in the 100 backstroke, which to me and you is numbers. But to swim folk, it's pretty remarkable. It's the fastest pre-January time that's known in NCAA history, and it's also the fifth fastest ever in college swimming. So pretty big deal. You know, he's up there on lists with the Ryan Lochtes and Ryan Murphys of the world.
Wow.
And he's put, you know, he's pretty much almost single-handedly put GCU in the national top 25 for swimming. They're ranked 16th right now. And you know, in the swim world, once you get an automatic qualifier, now if they can get one more relay qualified, then that will allow them to get a bunch of other relays qualified on B cuts, the kind of supplementary cuts. So it's a really momentous thing for the swim program and what Steve Schaefer's been doing with that program.
You know, it's really cool to hear you just rattle everything off. Like, you're not a basketball guy, so you're just thriving. You're thriving at GCU. It's great to hear your voice and all the enthusiasm. It's got to be fun every day walking into work not knowing really what cool thing you're going to see on a given day from kids. It's got to be fun.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of winning around. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's a big change.
I could insert a joke, but I'm not going to. So
there's 21 teams, so there's no shortage of interesting angles and material, and you're around college athletes who all are enjoying, you know, whatever attention they get. You know, they really relish what they're doing, the opportunities, and they appreciate, you know, it being highlighted. So it's fun to give them that shine.
Stay well. Appreciate you and hearing your voice as always. Thanks.
All right. Best to you, Brad. Happy holidays.
You as well. There's Paul Coro, GCULopes.com. A lot going on campus. And that is Talk to the Lopes this week.